Chapter 29. Judge Prelate made an exception. He listened and heard how desperately Thaddeus needed to interview this new witness, the one that had just been located. SAAG Barr objected and all but cursed Thaddeus, but in the end, the judge allowed the evening recess to begin at 3 o'clock. For the next 2 hours, 1 to 3, Thaddeus conducted a rather cursory voir dire. He still wasn't sure what his defense was going to be, so he didn't try to get into specifics of the case with them. Never mind that that wasn't allowed anyway. Everyone tried it, and he would be no different. Following the day's recess, Thaddeus hurried straight over to the jail. 15 minutes later, he was back at the office. Christine brought a workout bag into the office with her.
"Parts and equipment," she said.
"We're going to need some basic things. I'm ready to do my part. Now, what did you find out about the inventory?"
"I talked to Charlie. He showed me the inventory. They have her purse, but not her wallet. I talked to Ermeline. She always keeps her wallet in her purse, so somebody removed her wallet from her purse before they booked her into jail."
"Hector."
"That's what I'm thinking.
Let's go stick some gas in the Buick and head north. I texted Buddy. He's good with the kids. They'll be fine with him tonight."
"I'll drive. Let's call the Chicago PD officer on the way. I'll bet there's more he can tell us."
"We're off."
They gassed up, got coffee at a drive-thru, and headed north on I-55. 3 hours later, they were in Chicago, headed west, driving to the rendezvous with Officer Forenzio, Chicago PD. On the phone, while Thaddeus drove, Christine explained about Ermeline, about Victor, and generally what they were looking for. Officer Forenzio told her that he had the name and workplace address of the woman who had been using the Amex card. Rather than giving it out over the phone, he wanted to meet with them, see some ID, and then he would give them what they wanted. They pulled into a Dave & Buster's on the west side of the city. A police cruiser was already parked out front. It was just about 6 p.m. and blowing snow. The sun had been down for a couple hours already, and the lights from the adjacent freeway cast an orange tint into the sky. Inside, they found two police officers having coffee and pie at the first booth. Names were traded, and Christine and Thaddeus joined them. Thaddeus opened his wallet and displayed his bar card. Officer Forenzio studied it, studied his driver's license, and then nodded.
"Okay, but let me tell you about this girl. She ain't the one you're looking for. I've run this girl in before, once for prostitution, once for possession of coke. She's a good kid, but she's gonna die if somebody don't take over."
"I can't do that," Thaddeus said.
"I know. I'm just saying. She might know the guy you're looking for, and she might not. Girls like this, guys are a constant blur to them. They'll use any and everything that comes along. A stolen credit card beef is nothing to her."
"We'll find out what we can and back off."
"She's a good kid. I think she'll honestly try to help you if you tell her the whole story like you did me. Tell her about the mom and her kid, the one charged with murder. That'll get her going."
"Will do," Thaddeus said.
"Okay, I'm buying. Give me the check." "Nope, can't let you do that. You catch this loser and get him out of my city and we're even. Sorry, miss, I hate these guys."
"Hey," Christine said. "You say he's a loser. I can't disagree."
The cop smiled. Christine and Thaddeus went out to the black Buick.
"What do you say we hit the Pussycat Club?"
She shook her head.
"Nope. First we get a room. We'll hit the club about 9 tonight, after she's dopey and feeling no pain."
"Where do we get a room?"
"Something downtown. Downtown and cheap. Our defense budget is very limited."
Thaddeus drove them back into the city. At Wacker Drive, he took Madison East several blocks.
"What about that?"
he said, indicating a rundown-looking four-story hotel.
"Looks cheap enough. Let's try it."
Thad put the room on his bank card, and they checked in. Even for a rundown flophouse, the room charge was over $200 for the night. Some things never change, they knew, and Chicago wasn't known for low-priced anything. Christine took her workout bag up on the moaning elevator. It was a metal room key, not one of the electronic room passes. Thaddeus let them in. Christine immediately flopped on the double nearest the window. She sat up and parted the drapes with her fingers. She peered outside. Another building was close enough to reach out and touch.
"View's not much," she sighed.
"But we're not exactly here for the view." Thaddeus sat on his bed.
"You hungry?"
They hadn't eaten since leaving orbit.
"I'm going downstairs and scout around, see what I can get us to eat."
"I would like to stretch out and try a nap, but I'm afraid of bed bugs. I'll take the easy chair and try to catch a few Z's."
"See you in a few."
He went downstairs and stood out on the sidewalk. The traffic was loud and zipping by, mostly yellow taxicabs and a few motorists who apparently hadn't gotten the news that driving in Chicago was taking your life in your own hands. Much honking and tires squealing and sudden screeching stops.
Good to be in the city, he muttered, and headed west.
He returned with gyros, chips, and cokes in cans. Christine had been lightly napping in the easy chair, but she was ravenous, and they gulped down the sandwiches and two bags of chips. The cokes washed everything down. Finally, Thaddeus said he was going to try out his bed, but on top the spread. He lay down and shut his eyes and was asleep in minutes. She looked over at him when she heard the light snoring and shook her head.
Pray this place ain't buggy, she said, and closed her eyes.
She woke him at 9:15. He had been dreaming about Eileen Creighton and the horse farm he would one day have with her. Christine's hand on his shoulder, shaking, abruptly ended his glory and brought him back to reality. Night. He could see it through the crack in the curtains. Night in Chicago, flea-bag motel with Christine Sussman looking down at him. Work to do. He sat up and shook his head to get clarity.
What's up first?
You're going to be my chauffeur tonight. You're going to drive, and I'm going to make some calls. When we're done, you'll be very happy.
So what will you be doing?
Getting the witness statement we need.
How?
You're the lawyer. You can't have direct contact with the witnesses yourself. That bitch at the courthouse would like nothing better than to charge you with witness tampering. Tonight is my night. I contact the witnesses without you.
Oh.
So let's get started.
They set the GPS and wound up in the parking lot of a low, sleazy-looking building that at one time had probably been a fairly upscale restaurant. Now the neighborhood had changed and the respectables had been replaced by the denizens and lounge lizards. Thaddeus placed it in park and stared at the white walls and roofline with purple trim and pink neons. There was a huge picture of a cat, Pussy Cat, accepting a $5 bill from an outstretched hand. Below that it flashed, "Girls, girls, girls, all nude, barely legal."
"Crap," he said.
"Give me a $100 bill out of the rent money, please."
He did as he was told.
"What are you going to tell her?"
"Going to buy an address. Be right back."
And she was. She wasn't inside 10 minutes until she reappeared, in no great hurry, and walked confidently to the car. In her hand, she waved at him a bar tab, on the back of which was writing.
"Address,"
she said, and slipped it before his eyes when she was back inside the car.
"Set the GPS and let's go. He'll be on the prowl in the next little while if he's not already."
"So what happened in there?"
"I found the girl. Asked her about Hector. She wanted to know if I was a cop. I said no, and she believed me. For $100, I got the hotel and room number."
"How the hell did she remember all that?"
"Turns out she stayed with him for a week, until his money ran out. Then she went back to her own place. She was coked up tonight pretty bad and jonesing for money."
"So the money will buy her a gram of coke?"
"She wishes."
"So much for my rent money."
"A great spend, Thaddeus. It'll come back tenfold. Doesn't the Bible say tenfold?"
"Or a hundredfold, I believe."
"Well, it's worth it, whatever. Now drive on."
He slipped into traffic and obeyed the Garmin voice, going left, then straight 300 feet, then making a U-turn and heading back, then right, and then straight for a mile. While he was driving along, Christine reached behind and retrieved her fire engine red gym bag. She placed it in her lap and unzipped the top.
"What do you have in there?"
he asked.
"You don't want to know."
"Now I do. What is it?"
"Not much. Firm camera for the statement I'm going to get you. Something I picked up from the sale barn."
"Hector's statement. You're going to record it?"
"I am," she said, and smiled. "You can use it in court."
"Probably not. It's hearsay."
"We'll worry about that later. I'm sure you'll find some way around some dumb evidentiary rule like hearsay."
"Damn."
"Trust me, silly boy," she laughed. "Just get me to Hector's hotel before he stuffs a wad of tissue in his underwear and goes on prowl like some hung dude, which I am certain he is not."
"How are you certain?"
"Trust me. I know this guy. I'm married to his second cousin."
"TMI. I'm sorry I asked."
"Drive on."
Garmin brought them to a hotel painted white with green window trim and a red entryway. The flashing neon said Lorelei Arms. Thaddeus pulled up and over the drive-in. He found an empty spot for the second time that night, put it in park while Christine gathered her bright red gym bag up over her shoulder and said she'd be back in about 30 minutes. He asked whether she needed to know anything about the statement, and she just gave him a look.
"Didn't mean to insult you," he muttered as she walked around and out of the headlights.
It was cold, so he left it running but turned off the lights. He checked the time.
9:38 p.m. He was wearing his gun under his jacket, and he was glad. He would give Christine until 10:10, then he would call for police assistance because she would be in trouble if she wasn't back by then. He switched on the radio. WCGI, the howling voice yelled through the quad speakers. The FM station then launched into a string of obnoxious hip-hop loaded with epitaphs against police and against women, and Thaddeus twirled the dial. He punched it for AM and found 720 WGN and came in on the middle of a discussion about the Blackhawks' chances for a repeat Stanley Cup. He wasn't a big hockey follower, NBA was more his thing, but he wasn't all that picky right now either, just something to pass the time while Christine was risking life and limb to help her friend Ermeline. He actually knew very little about Christine's prior life in the military. She said little about it whenever the topic came up, and she was death on the Middle East and what she had done there. The few times somebody had asked her about it, that Thaddeus had heard, she had abruptly changed the subject and talked about something as innocuous as basic training instead. He imagined Abu Ghraib or some such prison had figured into her past, but wasn't sure, and actually, it was none of his business. He liked her, and liked her work, and didn't really give a damn what she might have been up to in a prior life. It was 10:10, and he was ready to dial 911 when she suddenly emerged, the red gym bag over her shoulder, hurrying in his direction. She gave thumbs up, made a face, and jumped in. "Hit it," she cried. "Drive, drive, drive!" He wheeled the Buick out of the slot, backed up, and slammed into drive. They bounced up and over the entryway bump and veered sharply out into traffic. "What happened?" he shouted over the clamor and honking horns coming up behind them. "Was he there?" She laughed, uproariously, and couldn't stop. "He was," she finally managed. He had someone with him, another young lady. You wouldn't believe it. I gave her a bedsheet and made her go stand in the hallway." "What?" "Hector was very cooperative, gave a very thorough, very comprehensive statement. It's all recorded and ready for you to play for the jury. And right now, I need you to pull out your cell phone and dial up Officer Ferenzio. I'm putting the statement on a thumb drive and turning over a copy to him so he can put Hector on ice for us."
"What do you mean, exactly?"
"Simple. We need Hector locked up for the credit card theft, so he can't leave town. If you've got a hearsay problem, I want to know where we can find this guy and haul his ass into court."
"Damnation."
"Just doing my job. Now, about my raise. I know it's 3 months early, but we really need to talk." She giggled, a high, girlish giggle. He had never heard a more contradictory sound come out of his secretary, whom he had only known as rough and tumble and ready for action.
"A raise!"
"You've got it. Starting Monday."
"Starting last Monday."
"Okay, last Monday.
So how did it work? How in heaven's name did you get him to cooperate?"
"Well, it was shocking, but he decided to help."
"What do you mean it was shocking?"
"Oh, this."
She unzipped the top of the red gym bag and withdrew a 2-foot baton.
"Electric prod. I borrowed it from Jimmy Smitters at the sale barn. They shock the livestock with these. I mean, it was like totally shocking to Hector."
"You used that on him?" Thaddeus said with disbelief.
You shocked him?" "Can't tell you the details, boss, but it was all legal."
"Legal according to who, the CIA?
"Black arts. Anyway, it's done."
"Damn it all. I'm probably done, too."
"There's nothing on the statement to indicate duress. I made sure of that."
"Coercion?" he asked. "Did you coerce his statement?"
"Nothing on the video would indicate coercion."
"Torture? What about torture?"
"Thaddeus, what do you take me for?"
"I don't know. Nobody knows what they should take you for."
She settled back against the seat. "Well, find our little cop friend, and then take me for coffee. I need Starbucks like yesterday."
She laughed.
"What's funny?"
"We'll call the video the testicle statement."
Don't tell me, please."
"Or we could call it balls to the wall."
"Damn. Coffee, please. I need to steady my hands."
"You've got it."
20 minutes later, they handed off the thumb drive to Officer Nick Ferenzio, who thanked them and spun around his cruiser to go get Hector. He would make sure they put him in a deep, dark hole at 2700 South California Avenue, the Cook County Jail. It was home to 12,700 men and women waiting trial on thousands of charges, and Hector would feel right at home among his kind.